You're on with another episode of Sava FC. This is Antonio Scarano, and I'm here with Anthony Valenti, and we're bringing you all the latest news surrounding Italy's win in the Euro Cup today. But before we get into that conversation, please hit like, follow, and leave us a review on any platform that you are listening on. We would deeply and greatly appreciate it. Ant, how are you doing today?
I'm doing phenomenal. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Still living off of that high of the Euro Cup 2020 final.
It's unreal.
I can't believe it.
I can believe it. It just feels good.
I have done nothing but watch highlight videos, parade videos, read articles, look at memes the past 2 to 3 days.
Memes is a good one because I saw the best meme of all time.
Yeah, what was it?
Some gentleman getting a tattoo of Euro 2020, and it had the English flag, and it said, "It's coming home." That's the biggest meme of the century right there.
Well, good thing we live in a day and age where there is tattoo removal.
That's true.
So, obviously, we've mentioned it before. You know we were all biased for Italy, towards Italy, whatever it may be. We wanted them to win. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good match.
It was a good match.
So
it was a good tournament overall.
Before we get into the statistics of it, though, where were you watching the game? Who were you with?
I was here. I was home. I was sitting next to both my sons and my wife, and we watched the game. I moved from one couch to another, thinking that it was my fault that Shaw scored in 2 minutes because I wasn't sitting in my normal spot. You know, it's the typical soccer player superstition. You know, I watched every single game in a certain way on my couch, and I wasn't sitting there when Shaw scored that goal. So I said, get up off my spot. I got to sit back down right there. And I didn't move for the next 2 hours.
That's hilarious. Who was sitting in your spot? Was it one of your sons?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical. Honestly, I would have done the same thing, though. However, I had to throw superstition out the window this year. For the pure reason that when the Euro Cup started, I watched the first game with my father. And usually where I start watching the game and who I watch it with is who I watch it all the way through, right? Right. But then I had a trip to Nashville to celebrate my birthday. So now I'm there with all my friends and we're watching it at a house in Nashville. And we continue to win. Then we come back. And my brother, who runs the Cugin podcast, nice little podcast about being Italian, if any other Italians want to follow.
And if you're not Italian and want to hear some good stories and laugh your butts off,
follow them anyway.
Exactly.
But so Cugin podcast had hosting events at Bar 80. They hosted events at Bar 80. So, okay, we're going to go watch a few games at Bar 80. And then the Spain game, I watched back at home with my father.
Yep.
And for the final, I went to New York City.
Right.
So this year, it didn't matter where I was or who I was with. It just seemed that, like I said, superstition had to get thrown out the window. This was destiny. It was written in the stars that Italy was going to be reborn after that disastrous failure in 2017 to not qualify for the 2018 World Cup. And become European champions.
I agree with you. What do they go on, a 34-game win streak?
After Sunday, it is now at a 34-game win streak. They are tied for the highest of all time. If they win one more, I believe they hold the record.
Who's got the
I want to say Spain and Brazil.
Okay.
So it was the Brazil team from the 90s.
Yep.
Obviously one of the most dominant teams Absolutely. We've ever seen. And then it was the Spain team from the mid to late 2000 okay. to 2000 to 2010 yeah,
Sergio
area.
Ramos and yep, all those
when
guys.
They won the Euros, what was it, in 08 and 2012?
I think so, yeah.
Correct. So it was in that time period that they accumulated those winning streaks. But Italy's joined them now. They're on par with them. So it'll be interesting to see how we can carry this momentum forward. Let me tell you, though, New York was insane. We were at a viewing party at Ribalta.
Yep.
Neapolitan pizza restaurant. The owner put down a maxi, what are they called? The maxi screens, jumbo screens.
Yeah, yeah. They're like inflatable, right?
Right. So he shut down a portion of 12th Ave. No, it wasn't inflatable. It was like on a, it was a metal screen.
Oh, okay.
Like these things were legit. They were the real deal.
Oh, wow.
And they shut down 12th Ave. They put the screen up. My cousin Josue and I, who watched the game together with a few of his friends, we get there. There's maybe a couple hundred people, right? But we got there early. We got there at around 11:30 because we wanted to get some food, some drinks, and just relax. When we got there, there was already a couple hundred people. As it gets closer to game time, more people start rolling in, more people start rolling in. All I know is that by the time the game started, I was standing shoulder to shoulder with people I didn't even know, and I couldn't see past a certain level because of how many people were there.
Wow.
Obviously, the game we saw fine, but if I had to guess, I would say there was over 1,000 people.
Wow.
That's how crazy it got.
That's insane.
So, let's go to the game.
Let's go to the game.
Tell me, what was your first reaction when it started?
When it started, I'd say about, it was about a minute in. I had there was this uncomfortable feeling. It felt like they were just playing lethargic. And I remember you saying on the last show how fast England can play.
Absolutely.
They hit that goal in 2 minutes. It was so fast. It caught our defense completely off guard. They had no idea what hit them. But I still knew that it wasn't enough to put these guys away.
So it's a double-edged sword. And I'll explain why in a second. But you said the defense got caught off guard. It wasn't the defense that got caught off guard. It was one player. It was Di Lorenzo. Okay? And I think that they prepared for Harry Kane so much during their practices leading up to the game that Di Lorenzo completely forgot to watch his outsides. Because if you saw, Harry Kane entered the box and they were stuck to him.
Right.
He had three guys on him, including Di Lorenzo, which allowed Shaw to get wide open on the outside. Defensive mistake by him, but he had overall had a pretty good tournament. Shaw's goal, in my opinion, I think he mishit the ball. And it just took the right bounce. Did you watch the replay of it?
Yeah.
I'm watching the replay and I'm like, he couldn't score that goal again if he tried.
I'd say a millisecond sooner or later, that ball was going over the net.
But it's not even about the millisecond. It was about the way that he hit it because it took that bounce towards the post. Remember?
Yeah, because if you watch Donnarumma, he was prepared for it to go a certain way.
Right.
And then he mishit it and it went the other way.
Because he hit it with the outside of his foot.
Right.
Which, listen, maybe he did mean to do it. We don't know. For me, my opinion, it looked like it was an accident. However, it ended up in a goal.
Sure.
And this goes back to the classic, you know, saying, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So
right.
Shaw was there and he just took a shot. And hats off to England there.
Yeah.
Because they came at them hard and heavy in those first couple of minutes.
They did. They did.
However, I think that was their downfall.
Yeah, because what for me, from my point of view and watching the game, after that, it took about 7 minutes for Italy to calm down.
Compose themselves, yep.
And then take complete control of the half. I mean, they had what? 61% possession in the first half?
By the end of the half, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But this was the other problem, in my opinion. If I'm Southgate and I see that we just scored 2 minutes in, I don't sit my team back on defense.
No.
I don't try and park the bus.
They should have just pressured and pressured and pressured and pressured and pressured, and they didn't. I think what, in the first half, England had one attempt on goal, one attempt on target, and that one attempt
was their goal.
Their goal.
Was their goal, absolutely. You know, Italians were judged for so long because of their Catenaccio style defense, yes. Right? Their Catenaccio style of play. And for those listening, Catenaccio means strong in the back and just wait for your opportunity to seize a counterattack or, you know, that one attacking opportunity that'll lead to a goal and then close yourself back on defense.
Right.
Because Catenaccio means chain. So right. Be strong like a chain.
Right.
England tried it against us. Is basically what ended up happening.
That's exactly what happened.
It could have worked. One, if it wasn't against Italy,
sure,
the creators of that tactic, right. And two, England's squad was just too young to be prepared to do that for 88 minutes straight.
Exactly.
The pressure was going to get to them no matter what.
Right. So let's talk about Italy's old style of playing real quick.
Okay, real quick.
For all you that listen or watch a professional soccer game and hear whistles when a player plays the ball back to the defense or back to the goalie, that is because it was invented in Italy. Whenever the players would pass the ball back to the goalie to waste time, they would whistle because they were pissed that they weren't attacking. For decades,
they would
do this. As far as I can remember watching Italian soccer, they would score one goal, and then they would go back, drop the ball back, play it off a defender, then to the keeper. And back then, the keeper could pick the ball up with his hands. So he'd pick the ball up. He'd bounce it a couple times. He'd put it back on the ground. As soon as somebody pressured him, he'd pick the ball up again, bounce it a couple times, and then boot it, you know?
I believe we touched on it on the last episode too, but Denmark was actually one of the teams that used that tactic when they won their Euro in 1992, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So shortly after, FIFA changed the rule. Exactly. They're like, we're not dealing with this anymore. But yeah, it was just an old school style of play that worked for many, many teams.
Right. Especially when you had a team like Italy that dedicated their teams to defense.
Right.
I mean, for 20, 30 years, they had the best defense in the world.
However,
maybe longer than 20, 30 years.
It seems like Italy has fared well every time a different style coach comes in. I mean, look at the 94 World Cup when Arrigo Sacchi came in, right? Arrigo Sacchi wasn't your Catenaccio style coach.
Right.
He wanted to attack. He wanted to go out and win and score. And granted, they had a great team then, including Roberto Baggio.
Right. Who was hurt.
Right. Who was hurt for most of that tournament. So they made it to the final. Great Brazil squad. They lost in the final. It was what it was. Then, you know, we won with Lippi. And Lippi was a weird mix in 2006 when we won the World Cup because it was Catenaccio style, but we also had the firepower up top. It was just a good mix of everything overall. They played well. Then we go under, who was it?
Exactly. Nobody remembers his name because they didn't qualify for the World Cup.
No. I'm talking about, we're going to get to him. I know who that is. I'll never forget him. Trust me. But no, after Lippi, because Lippi had a failure in the 2010 World Cup, is that when we switched to Conte or Prandelli?
I think it was Conte.
Okay. So we switched to Conte. No. At one point, we switched to Donadoni. Wasn't Donadoni coaching the national team?
Oh, yeah.
Donadoni was coaching the national team. And he was more of that defending style of play.
He was a winger, I believe.
Yeah.
So defensive.
Well, he was attacking, but again, grew up in that Catenaccio style era. After that, we had Conte. We had Prandelli. And then we went to Ventura. And Ventura will go down in history as the worst coach for the national team ever, in my opinion.
Of all time. When was the last time they didn't qualify for a World Cup before him?
I can't remember.
Maybe before World War II.
Probably. Actually, interesting fact. We'll have to look that up. Ventura refused to play Insigne, first of all. Which, after we saw the tournament that Insigne had this year.
Forget it.
So, refused to play Insigne. Then made a statement that Jorginho, who is now a Champions League winner with Chelsea and a Euro Cup winner with Italy, he said Jorginho wasn't good enough for the squad and didn't fit his style of play.
Now, fun fact, you know, Mancini said Jorginho shouldn't play for the national team. He said this a few years back because he was not an Italian-born soccer player. And when they asked him that again, once he put him back on the squad, he said, that was the old me. Everyone can change. I didn't see things the way I see them now.
And you want to know what I love about Mancini admitting that? The Mancini hiring started a movement, a campaign, whatever you want to call it, that Italy embraced up until this Euro final, which was called the Rinascimento, right? The Renaissance, the rebirth.
Right, the rebirth, yep.
Because after that failure in 2017 of not being able to qualify for the World Cup, we needed to be reborn, and which is exactly what Mancini did, okay? His mentality changed. The mentality around the team started to change. The mentality of the players changed. We saw something that we have never seen happen before, and they came back stronger from it.
As you're saying this, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about all the things that happen on, even, you know, behind the curtain that people don't know about.
Right. Oh, so for the second half of today's episode, I actually have some fun facts about things that have been happening behind the curtain that I was able to find. I mean, this team, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I know we're talking a lot about Italy. England can say the same as well, though.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I've never seen an English team like this. Never.
No. And it started at the last World Cup.
And I've seen England play since 1990. Players like Paul Gascoigne, David Beckham. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. That's just naming two. The gap of the years are huge. But this team that England put out on the field was phenomenal.
Well, it was the way to go. And like I said, it started in the last World Cup, where England, sure enough, started to become a force to be reckoned with. And I'm not going to lie, I do like their style of play. I respect England as a team. They are young, though.
Right.
And they are going to bring this momentum of achieving, you know, going into a final with them into the next World Cup in November of 2022. Nobody should ever undervalue them. They are a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely.
And they held Italy. We have to remember that.
Yeah.
We only scored one on them in regular time. We've digressed a lot, however.
Yes, we have.
So, back to the game. So the first half, we talked about basically England had that one opportunity that they scored off of. Italy created six chances, but only one of them on target.
Right.
It seemed like England had us shut down no matter what we tried in attack. The only thing that was saving us was Chiesa.
That's it.
Chiesa was a player that was literally giving it. He was putting the team on his back saying, I'm going to try to do something for us.
And I thought maybe like at the 20th minute, they were going to take out Immobile and put in Belotti, but that never happened.
Again, we've talked about this before. Immobile should have stayed home for this Euro. I'm happy for him. I'm glad that he won. He got to hold the trophy. It is what it is. I don't see him as a national team player. I just don't. He's a great player for Lazio. He's a great person from everything I've read and seen.
Well, you know, he gets the nod for the things he's done in Serie A, you know. So I think he deserves the right to be on the national team for the things he's done in Serie A.
Right.
But if you're going to play at that stage, you got to be able to do.
You have to step up. You have to be ready to be the difference maker, especially when you're our striker. Going back to 2006, no matter who came in at striker, Iaquinta, Inzaghi, Gilardino, Luca Toni, who else did we have up there at that time? Del Piero, okay? I feel like I'm forgetting somebody from the 2006 squad. Regardless, no matter what it was, all those guys that I just mentioned that played forward, all scored in that World Cup.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And they came through when it mattered the most.
Right.
Immobile scored in this tournament, but it was against the weaker sides in the group stages. Okay? After that, we didn't hear from him.
Right.
He disappeared. And that's what I don't like.
But at the same time, I'm going to play devil's advocate. He played the striker position the way he needed to create opportunities for the guys that did score goals, if you want to look at it that way.
Yes and no, though, because so watching the game again, okay, and we're still just talking about first half, Harry Kane was more dangerous than Chiro Immobile was, and Immobile had more opportunities in the box than Harry Kane did.
I think Harry Kane is a better player than Chiro Immobile.
Harry Kane is one of the best strikers in the world.
Okay.
But still, Immobile, with all the experience that he has and the goals that he scored in Serie A, should have at least been half of what Harry Kane was. And I don't think Immobile was even a quarter of that. Okay?
Fair enough.
Harry Kane might have played decoy this game, but he was a damn good decoy because he kept opening up space for everybody else on the outsides and through the middle. So, first half, tactically, you know, Italy's creating, can't get anything on target. We held possession. We had what? You said 61% possession?
61%.
It didn't matter 39%. To me because we were moving that ball around, but it wasn't going anywhere. It was like, oh, let's get to the edge of the box. All right, can't do this here. Let's move it back around. And then we just, It went nowhere. It was kind of boring.
That's where the possession percentage gets diluted, right?
Absolutely.
So they get to that. They get to the top of the 18, then they drop it all the way back. Then they rebuild.
Absolutely.
Listen, for anybody that doesn't really watch soccer or doesn't understand that, that's the way it's done. You don't have an opportunity. You're blocked off. You got to try to switch fields.
I'm going to disagree with you here. That's not the way it's done. And I'll tell you why. Because yes, you're supposed to move the ball around to try and create. But once you get into that final third, something needs to happen with the ball.
Right.
We need to make a play somewhere.
Fair enough.
This was lethargic.
Once you're in past the 18 on either side, you got to make something happen.
Something's got to happen.
If you're not close enough, you don't want to take a wild shot and just lose the ball.
But I'm not talking about even taking the wild shots. We just weren't even creating opportunities to take a shot. That's what was getting me angry.
Maybe England was just not allowing them, you know.
As I said before, hats off to England for the way they played defensively in that first half. Even in the second half, England defended amazing, and they were great on the counters.
Yeah.
Okay?
But the speed, just unreal.
Unbelievable.
Unreal.
Let's move over from this first half, because we could debate this back and forth.
Yeah, we can.
Let's go into the second half. The way we started the second half, okay, I felt something change. It was how I was just describing that whole Rinascimento campaign, the rebirth, the reborn. It's like we went into the halftime down, right? Defeated already.
Yeah.
At least that's how I felt as a fan. Come back in the second half, it's starting to look like a different Italy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because I think there was a pep talk that happened at halftime.
Oh, I believe so.
I think, you know, and I'd like to think the pep talk went a little something like this. Spinazzola can't play. He wants to be out there. Gianluca Vialli is here, and he's battling cancer, and he's going through his treatments. What are you guys doing out there? You going to let them walk all over you? Nope. And the attitude was completely different when they came out.
You know, and it's funny you say that. Well, it's not funny, but that's one of the biggest themes around this team, and it was the unity.
Absolutely.
The fact that they felt like they had a reason to play for one another.
Yeah.
All right?
And it wasn't just one another. It was for their country, too. They wanted to win for the people, for everything that has gone on for the last 2 years.
Absolutely. I agree with that, but it was – as big as that is to play for your country – it was something in the locker room that kept them more united and together. It was that consistency of being together every day and sacrificing your body, putting it on the line, giving it all you have, literally emptying your tank, knowing that you were not going to leave that field until you had done your job.
Right.
That was the message that Mancini was giving these guys, and Absolutely. They executed it well. So we go into the second half. Right away, I think it was minutes in, we ended up winning a free kick on the edge of the box.
That's right.
Already, we're looking dangerous. We missed the free kick. Unfortunately.
That was Insigne took it.
I believe
and
so.
And I think it sailed over it would have been his right upper 90,
right.
Pickford's left shoulder.
Which we know Insigne is good for those.
Absolutely.
But, however, it was a miss. But that's where Italy started to become amazing. We kept the foot on the gas. We kept going. We kept attacking. And now, whereas we were creating in the first half, not creating, but, you know, we had those opportunities. Now we were starting to create chances, right? Because we had one attempt on target in the first half. In the entire second half, we had at least four.
Right.
Okay? Which four may not sound like a lot, but how many did England have?
Zero.
Exactly. We were doing what we had to do, and we did it right.
They had nine attempts on goal. Those four were
Italy did.
On target.
Italy had nine attempts
right.
on
goal. Italy had nine attempts on goal. But four were more on target, meaning they could have went in, but Pickford made sure they didn't.
Pickford had an amazing game.
I think he's going to get the Golden Gloves. He had five clean sheets.
He did get the Golden Gloves.
Oh, he did?
He did get the Golden Gloves.
When did I miss that? Where have I been living? Under a rock?
I have no idea where you've been. That's why you just threw me off for a second.
Yeah,
I got confused. Yeah, no, Pickford got the Golden Gloves, but the player of the tournament went to Donnarumma.
You know what the problem is? I've been so into reading all the articles about Italy and watching the videos. You're
forgetting about England.
I forgot about him.
Yeah. Pickford obviously had the game of his life. He did phenomenal, making saves. I remember there was one opportunity where we crossed the ball in, and I believe it was Berardi. This was later on in the second half, but Berardi's running in. And, you know, by an inch, he missed getting to the ball. But why did he miss getting to the ball? Because Pickford came out and got it with his hand, with his arm.
That's right. That's right.
And got the ball away from that dangerous area. It's just the guy was on point that day.
Yeah. I mean, he was on point all the time, really. I mean, the two best goalkeepers, I thought, not only the tournament, maybe in the world, are Donnarumma and Pickford.
See, I'm more of a Schmeichel fan.
I like Schmeichel too.
I like him second, but if I had to pick a third, it's Pickford.
Yeah.
So second half, 67 minutes in. Now, this isn't our first attempt on corner at the 67th. We've had plenty of corners, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure how many, but not plenty. Maybe a couple.
We had a fair amount, though, where we could have created something off of those corners. And every time we would go to take a corner, I'd look at my cousin, Josh, Josue, and I'd say, here we go, Chiellini header. Here we go, Chiellini header. And it just, I wanted a defender to score.
Right.
But Chiellini is our captain. I just kept throwing his name out.
Right.
But I had this feeling that somehow it was going to be a defender. 67th minute in, Italy takes the corner kick, right? The ball makes it into the back where I believe it was Verratti.
Yeah.
Verratti was there, gets a head on the ball, right? Angles the ball into the bottom corner of the net. Pickford, who we just said, phenomenal goalkeeper, phenomenal game, gets his hand to the ball, saves it. But the beast in Bonucci never stopped following the play.
Right.
And he knocks this thing with almost, I want to say, like the might of God into the back of the net. Usually a shot from that close, there's no need to kill a ball, right? It's a tap. Bonucci killed this
thing. He wanted to make sure the ball wasn't coming out in any way, shape, or form. He actually wanted to see it come out the other side of the net.
He had a point to prove.
Yeah.
He had a point to prove. It reminded me of one of those scenarios where, you know, you're watching an NBA game and a team is down, but they, you know, like a LeBron, all right, when he was on the Cavs and they were playing against the Golden State Warriors. LeBron gets the ball, runs up to the net, dunks it in, right? Crowd starts going wild. Teams are energized now. It was one of those things that it changes the momentum of a game a little bit to see something like that happen.
Right, absolutely.
And after that 67th minute, Italy woke up.
I mean, they woke up as the second half started, but it was just they woke up the the sleeping lion again. Right.
Well, they didn't wake up the sleeping lion. The lion continued to sleep for a little bit longer, it seemed like. The three lions.
Yeah, the three lions.
The three lions continued to sleep for a bit longer. But again, it comes back to what I was saying before. This team was young. Yeah. This England team was young. They weren't ready to defend that for 88 minutes.
Sure.
So now you had just been leading for 68 minutes, right? Italy scores. You're a young team. Those guys had to be scared.
Absolutely.
They had to be.
I mean, it's not only scared, but, you know, I've been in those situations. You think you're going to win this thing with the, you know, 20 minutes left.
Right.
You're holding it down. You know you got them, you know, the speed on them. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, somebody pops one in.
Right.
You're now going,
crap.
What are we doing?
Yep.
What do we do now? We couldn't do anything leading up to this. And now we've got to press even harder. So what happens is they press too hard, can cause a mistake. Italy scores another goal, which didn't happen.
Right.
I think they played it safe for the remaining of the time, hoping to get something to go in extra time.
See, I don't think they were hoping to go into extra time. I think they thought they could have gotten us with a counter. And put one in to make it 2-1.
They tried a couple counters.
They tried. And, you know, like we said, they had those three attempts on goal. They were dangerous. It was just solid defending by Italy. But this was a difference maker. Not only was Italy defending solidly, they were also moving up in attack
right,
real quick, real well. Okay? When I see Bonucci running through the middle of the field and Chiellini stretching to the outsides, almost looking like a winger, I was like, what is going on here? And I was talking to somebody and they made a point and they put it best. They said, Bonucci and Chiellini are old. These guys knew, especially after they were both there and lost the 2012 Euro final. This was their last chance. They didn't have another chance.
They didn't have another chance. They were going to do whatever it took to win the game. And when I mean whatever it took, this leads us into extra time.
Yes. Before we head into extra time, though, there's 2 points I want to make. So there's 1 point in the second half. We had a sub. I believe it was Barella coming out for Cristante. And you know how we were talking about that unity, right? That adrenaline, that will and need to fight till the end, right? Barella, instead of just high-fiving his teammates saying, get out there and kick some butt, he looked at Cristante and basically almost punched him in the throat and said, go out there and give it everything you got for the next 30, 40 minutes, whatever, however long it was that Cristante came in for, right? Yeah. It was that adrenaline, that fight in them, that it's almost like you knew Barella was a little bit tired and we didn't need to make a tactical change.
Sure.
But he still had it in him and he wanted to push that energy towards Cristante saying, get the job done.
Right.
The second thing I want to address in regular time before we move to overtime. There's been a lot of debate, a lot of debate on a certain foul that happened in the 96th minute of regular time.
That's what I was alluding to. I said extra time, but that
okay.
That's exactly what I was alluding to.
Okay. So, what's your take on it?
My take is that was, well, for those that don't know, Saka gets the ball, who is literally the Flash with the soccer ball. He's got Chiellini beat. So what's Chiellini do? He's got to make a foul here. So he tries to grab him by the back of the shirt. But this kid's just too fast. So by the grace of who God, his pinky gets caught on the back of his collar. If you go back and watch, his pinky's what pulled him back.
Right.
And yanked the kid down. I thought it was a 1,000 IQ play. It needed to be done. If it didn't get done, there could have been a chance of a breakaway goal.
Absolutely. Chiellini wasn't the last player on defense, and he knew that, right? But he knew Saka could be dangerous because Saka would have continued down that sideline and either then cut through the middle, burning the other defender.
Cut through the middle. There was no other defender available.
No, there was one other defender behind because if there wasn't, that would have been a red card for Chiellini
as the last defender
on the ball.
Right.
So that was a 1,000 IQ play, like you said, okay? Knowing you're not on a card, it's a smart tactical foul, right? You allow your team to get back. England fans are furious over this. There was a petition started online, which has like over 100,000 signatures now, right? Saying that England and Italy should be replayed because the ref favored Italy. We paid him off. And, you know, we were butchers on the field. We were old men beating up on little kids.
Oh, is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. Go read the comments. The petition is hysterical.
I mean, they really want to bring up, you know.
Oh, I know.
The physicality of a play. Italy brought their own physicality to them and they couldn't handle it. Italy never plays like this. They played English-style soccer.
I wouldn't go as far as saying English-style soccer.
Physicality-wise.
Physicality-wise, we did.
Not technical or anything else. I'm talking about physicality-wise. Italy doesn't play like that normally. They had to bring it to these guys.
It's just funny to see because you have all these English fans screaming about this tactical foul. But a coach like Mourinho, who is now at Roma, okay? He said it 2 or 3 years ago when he played against Juventus. And he said it again now after the Euro Cup. He goes, if there were ever a class on how to be a central defender, Bonucci and Chiellini should teach it.
Exactly.
Because these are the best two in the world at their job.
Right. But you know what? Maybe we should start a petition for the same fans with, I want to say it was the 1986 World Cup when Argentina was playing England and Maradona Hand the ball in the goal. We should start a petition now. Maybe we could raise Maradona out of the dead and he'll play one last game for them.
Listen, there's no way they're ever replaying that game.
No way.
But it's just crazy to see how many English fans are upset.
If that was the case and they replayed that game, guess what? They're going to replay the Denmark game.
Right.
For what the fan did to Schmeichel.
Here's one thing I'm going to say. Obviously, as we know, a lot of museums in London, England, you know, all the artifacts that they have, they're essentially stolen from the rest of the world, right? Nothing is theirs. They've stolen everything that they have.
Right. That goes for most museums.
Right. But I'm just using them as an example, right? So they have a lot of Greek sculptures, paintings, and stuff that Greece wants back, okay? So the excuse that was given to Greece when they requested their pieces back was that you guys don't have the facilities to maintain them. So what does Greece do? Greece went out and they built the facilities to maintain these pieces.
No, give me my stuff back.
All right. And you know what London's response was to them? Oh, we can't give it back to you because then we'll set a precedent to give our stuff back, you know, to give everybody their stuff back. So English fans, I got this one for you. We're not going to replay this game because then we're going to set the precedent to go back and replay every game that's ever been in question.
Exactly.
So enjoy this loss. I think it's time for a little anchor break. And now we're in extra time.
Yes, we are.
Extra time, besides a few opportunities here and there, seemed pretty uneventful.
It was.
It almost seemed like at one point both teams were playing for the PKs.
Yeah, they were. I think they were trying to see who had the better goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, I truly believe no team wants to go into PKs to decide a match. You know, England was dangerous in a few scenarios. Italy was dangerous in a few others. I mean, Berardi had that one chance. Was it Berardi? Yeah, it was Berardi.
Yeah.
Berardi had that one chance that ended up being deemed offsides anyway.
Right.
But, you know, they were trying, but they were also playing a little bit more reserved.
Yeah.
You know, it was just we don't want to make any mistakes.
Right.
And that's why the game looked at a standstill.
But towards the end of the second half of extra time, Southgate makes a couple of substitutions.
Right. So they actually ended up being at the 120th minute. They almost didn't even get them off in time. At the 120th minute, we get Sancho and Rashford.
Rashford, who I absolutely love for stuff that he's done off the field. We'll get to that afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Rashford is a very influential young man.
Absolutely. 23 years old, and the things that he's done in the last year.
Not only is he amazing as a player, in my opinion, but he is just, as a human, he's bigger than soccer.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Like we said, we'll touch on that in a little bit. So he subs Sancho and Rashford in.
A lot of people are wondering why he would do something like that, because they're just kids. They have no experience. But if you've seen these guys play and the way they place the ball, they're lights out.
They're coming in for those PKs.
That's it. He's putting them in for the PKs.
They're coming in to take the kick from the spot. And you know what? I don't disagree with that decision.
I don't either, because when I saw them getting ready to come in, I got nervous because I knew exactly what he was doing.
Right. You know, there's been a lot of criticism of Southgate for doing that. I don't agree with it.
The criticism.
I don't agree with the criticism. This man has been with this team day in and day out, okay? Playing, you know, coaching these games, coaching them in practice. He knows what he sees.
Exactly.
He knows what he's doing. He put them in there for a reason.
Right.
And if he didn't think he was doing the right thing, he wouldn't have done it.
Right.
All right. And like you said, you were afraid. I was also afraid.
Absolutely.
When I saw Rashford, Sancho, not as much. Sancho, in my opinion, I didn't know if he was going to be able to take advantage of the opportunity coming in so late and basically being cold.
Right.
But Rashford, I thought, okay, this guy is going to hurt us in
the
penalty kicks.
Shots,
Regular time, I mean, extra time ends. Did you notice that it was very different going into PKs against England than it was against Spain for Italy?
I mean, Chiellini was still his upbeat self, though.
It was a little bit more serious.
A little bit more.
Against Spain.
Sure, it's the final, and it's Spain. He's dealing with a kid that's probably, you know, closer to 20 years his age than anything else.
Well, not only that. So I was standing next to an England fan at this point outside Ribalta watching the game. And we're all laughing because we're like, uh-oh, Chiellini's not doing what he did against Spain. And the England fan turns around, and he was a great guy, by the way. Sportsmanship, you know, amazing the way he reacted afterwards. But he turns around and he says, well, yeah, he was going up against Harry Kane. He goes, you can't pick up Harry Kane and bounce him up and down. True. And he goes, that's, you know, true. Harry Kane would knock you right back.
That's true.
So we were laughing about that. But
it would have been funny if Harry Kane picked him up.
But even Harry Kane, as great of a player as he is, this is his first time finding himself in this situation.
Right.
You know? And you could tell the atmosphere was different. Yeah, Chiellini still chose to go first. And as we know, teams who usually go first in penalty shootouts have the advantage.
Yes.
So he chose to go first. And Italy got lucky on that both times, against Spain and against England. The right. fact that they got to choose.
Well, the statistics don't lie.
No, but the fact that we got to choose if we wanted to go first or second, that's huge. So we got lucky. Italy got lucky in both of those scenarios. The atmosphere was different. Everything just looked more serious.
Right.
Even when they showed the huddle of... So England and Spain, in my opinion, were the same. They were both serious, both of them. Spain looked more nervous, obviously.
Yeah.
England didn't look as nervous.
And back to Italy with their huddle, they were serious, but they weren't. I saw them laughing a little bit.
We'll have to go back.
Some of them, I'm telling you, from what I remember, it was a much more serious vibe. And the main difference that I noticed was in Donnarumma. Donnarumma against Spain had more of that giddish, whatever you want to call it. I don't even know the proper word. But there was like a playful attitude about him when he went into PKs against Spain. For England, it was stone cold killer.
Right.
He had this look in his eyes that before even a single shot was taken, I said to myself, he's going to decide this for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, at that moment, and we were talking about this before we started recording, is that I think he was so focused and so in the zone that, you know, when you see those movies when the athlete gets into the zone and everything quiets down, that's what's happening in his head. He's envisioning Kane, Maguire, Rashford, Sancho, Saka. He's envisioning each penalty kick as they're happening before it happens. And he knows what he's got to do.
And
they call that what? Veins of ice or iced veins. I don't even know.
He's got ice in his veins.
That's it.
Ice right in his there. Veins. Yeah. I mean, look, he had that look in his eyes, but even the entire Italy bench just looked a little bit more serious. But that serious look came off to me as, let's go get this done.
Right.
That's what it looked like to me. So we go to the first PK, Berardi. I'm still having nightmares about Locatelli missing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I am in the middle of thousands of people. Stomach is in knots. I'm literally hurting. I almost don't want to watch the screen, right? Berardi lines up, makes it.
Right. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about the shot. It was going in.
Yeah. Berardi, listen, he came in. He did his job. He did what he was supposed to. Then Kane lines up.
Forget it. That shot was unbelievable.
Out of all the PKs in my head that I had envisioned Donnarumma saving, Kane's was not one of them.
No, not
in
all.
My head, I knew Kane's going to make this 1-1.
There was no chance any goalkeeper was saving that shot.
No. And just again, hats off to Kane for what an incredible player he is. I really and truly do respect that guy. And it's just, he stepped up under pressure as well.
Absolutely.
So hats off to Kane.
Now, my guy who I was building up.
You love him.
I love him. I don't know what it is about him. I like him, right? And I'm going, he's going to get it.
To me,
Belotti.
He's a cheaper version of Ciro Immobile.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like he's a better player.
I don't agree.
No?
We'll have to agree to disagree on this one.
Let's just not say that he's a better player because talent-wise, no, you're right. I feel like he's got a bigger heart. There's something about his presence that draws me to him. I don't know what it is. I feel like he's got like a...
He's a likable person.
Right.
I'm going to go with that. And I can't give into your argument of he's got a bigger heart because, like I said before, this team together.
Right.
Their hearts were all big and united. Yeah, yeah, okay. So I can't even give you that. The one thing I could say that Belotti provides over Immobile is that at least Immobile gets himself, Belotti gets himself into the right positions. I mean, I remember as soon as Belotti came in the second half, he had already more touches on the ball than Immobile had the entire 60, 70 minutes that he was in. So he is a little bit of a difference maker. But notice that when Belotti has come in this tournament, he's usually helped us out more defensively than he has in attack.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that's why he gets put in late in the game as a defensive replacement, to support the defense, to drop back.
To be one of those guys to be able to hold the ball and allow us to move it, up the field again.
I was hoping he scored two in regulation or, whenever he
I remember
in.
That was your prediction. You were saying Belotti too.
Yeah.
I remember.
It didn't happen. But he takes the shot. Pickford blocks him. My heart's broken.
When I saw Belotti run up,
you knew.
I knew.
You knew.
I knew.
I mean, you saw. I mean, you saw it actually getting blocked before he took the shot.
Because he made the critical mistake that every penalty taker makes when they miss. He switched his spot.
Yes.
Okay? Belotti is known for going to the keeper's right, bottom corner, and power behind the ball.
Yeah.
He's good at it. That's his shot.
He guessed himself. That's the problem.
But why?
We do that, right? As penalty kick takers, you think that you start to second guess yourself in the moment. And then you're like, am I going to go normal to the bottom left? Am I going to go bottom right? And then as the referee blows the whistle, you have no choice. You got to pick one of the two. And he picked the wrong. He second guessed himself and that's it. But thank God.
Hold up. All I'm saying is I don't care if you're a one-trick pony. If you do that trick well, stick with it. That's all I would want better from our strikers or penalty kick.
Absolutely. You should just go with the same. They study your PKs. Just stick with whatever you're doing.
But when we saw Belotti take his against Spain, it doesn't matter how much you study that shot. Right. You're not getting to
it. You're not.
So stick with it. That's my only gripe against Belotti.
So Maguire comes up. Now, this is a guy I was saying in the last podcast that we got to watch out for. The guy's dangerous coming out of the back. He's big. He's strong.
So fun fact, we put out a little question today. So the team of the tournament was announced, right?
Right.
Maguire was obviously paired in there with Bonucci for the center backs of the tournament. And I asked our followers, who would you have rather seen in this lineup? One common thing that everybody said was they would have rather seen Chiellini over Maguire in that second center back spot.
I agree.
I don't know if I agree.
Well, I'll tell you why I agree. Because I feel like Chiellini had more of an impact to each win than maybe Maguire may have.
See, when I look back at the performances, Maguire was a defensive stud. Just consistent.
That's why I said we got to watch out for him.
Right. Throughout the entire tournament. Entire tournament. And if I had to choose of the two, which one was the better? And it breaks my heart to say this because I'm all Italy, but I am choosing Maguire over Chiellini.
Sure. I get it. Hey, whatever. I mean, my choice would have been, maybe replacing Sterling with, I don't know, Schick or Ronaldo or even Lukaku, Ronaldo scored 5 goals. I don't know how Sterling makes it as a striker there, maybe because he made it to the final.
Well, I believe they went by a certain formation and they're actually sticking because Sterling got in as a winger.
Oh, okay.
So they weren't putting a striker there. They were putting a pure winger.
Anyways, we digress. Let's go. So Maguire goes up, blasts it.
Beautiful, PK. Yeah. There's nothing Donnarumma was doing about that one. Next.
Bonucci.
Like I said, the guy who strikes that ball with the might of God.
Right.
Okay. I just love him, man. Granted, during the season, you'll hear me talk a lot about Bonucci and how much I hate him because we have to play against him.
Yeah.
Right. But that's just because it's frustrating to play against him. But when he's playing for your team, it's a sight to see.
Right.
And he lines up and right away, again, I knew. You can just tell he's going to score this.
Mm-hmm.
You just knew that it was going to happen. And Bonucci buried it. Buried it.
That's it.
That's it.
And we got Rashford, the late sub, who was just put in just to make this PK. What happens?
He misses.
Misses.
But why did Rashford miss?
I mean, I would say at 23 years old, with all the pressure, knowing you're going against Donnarumma.
Now, refresh my memory. Was it Rashford that took all that time, or was it Sancho that took all that time in the beginning?
I think it was Sancho that took all that time.
Was that Sancho? Okay, we're going to
have to. He went from the left to the right, and then he took.
Yeah, we're going to have to double check that. I thought it was Rashford, but you're right. I might be wrong. Either way, I just think he was too cold.
Yeah, well, too cold. The pressure, 23 years old, weight of the world on his shoulders.
Going it's a
against
lot.
Donnarumma, you know, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
And that's, I think, the biggest gripe I have with him coming in at 120 minutes. Maybe you should have brought him in before the half started and get him warmed up, like you said.
Absolutely.
You know? One that would have been a difference maker.
One of the hardest things is coming in as a penalty taker, and you weren't a part of the game at all.
At all.
You're cold. You need to be warm.
When these guys are warming up, all they're doing is running up and down the sideline. Right. It's not like they're going out there and kicking the ball.
But it's even just being in that game, getting into the rhythm, the flow of the game. That running around, it eases, it calms your nerves.
Sure.
You know, you feel settled in.
Right.
So when it comes time to take that kick, the nerves are there.
There.
I don't care what anybody says. The nerves are always going to be there, but they're a little bit less.
Right.
They're manageable.
And while you're playing the game, you're able to tune out the noise. If you're just coming in cold,
it's all you hear.
You can't tune it out.
It's all you hear. I agree.
So he misses it.
So Rashford hit the post, correct?
I believe so, the left post.
Fun fact, and Josue actually brought up this point. That post played an essential part in England's goal, Italy's goal, and Italy winning the whole thing. On England's goal in the second minute,
that's right.
That post was hit. That same exact post was then hit in the 67th minute when Bonucci scored his, okay? And then Rashford missed his PK by hitting that post.
Maybe the English fans should petition to get that post cut off.
That post removed, right?
Yeah. Anyways, next comes up.
Bernardeschi.
Yep.
All right. And I love Berna after this tournament. Before this tournament, I didn't even know why he was called up. However, Mancini once again proved that he knew what he was doing.
Exactly.
Berna's a guy who barely gets any playing time at Juventus. To this day, we still don't understand why he's on that squad. He's just not good enough to play for Juve. But his experience, his mentality, and the way he acts under pressure is just what we needed for both penalty shootouts. And there we saw Bernardeschi once again put his in the back of the net.
Right. Now we got another one of the kids that comes in. Sancho.
Yep.
Same thing. Misses it. He's cold.
Was Sancho's a saved or was it a miss?
No, he was a save.
So Sancho's was saved. So that goes credit to Donnarumma.
Right. But at the same time, though, you come in the same situation as Rashford. Right. So two kids miss, young kids, whole career ahead of them. Anyways, now we go to everyone's favorite midfielder,
Jorginho. I got to be honest, when Jorginho came up, I said, it's giving me Fabio Grosso vibes all over again. Right. 2006 World Cup. Player that people have slept on before, and he's going to be the difference maker. He's going to be the guy that sends us home with a win. But let's not forget, Jorginho not only played the whole game, he also played the whole semifinal. Okay? And then on top of it, he got pretty dinged up in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, I thought he was done.
Right.
I said to my cousin, I was texting my cousin, Steve, if he comes out,
we're done.
We're done. There's no one that can replace him.
I think we all had a little bit of a heart attack when Jorginho went out for that little bit. Okay. And the beauty of Jorginho's penalty kick is his approach to it.
Right.
Okay. That little hop step
It just throws the keeper off.
Right, because he hops and keepers are expecting the ball to come right after that foot plants. But it's almost that little lag and that delay in his right foot going to kick the ball where the keeper dives and Jorginho just adjusts where he's kicking the ball and puts it in the spot where the keeper did not go.
Right.
He did not do that hop step during this PK. Now, I don't know if it was because he was tired, if he was hurt, if he was nervous, but he didn't take the usual approach that he always does.
Right.
So he put it to Pickford's left. Pickford came up with the save.
Pickford's right.
Left.
Was it his left?
It was Jorginho's right to Pickford's left.
Okay.
And he came up with the save.
Yeah, that's it. But to Jorginho's credit, like I told you before, that was all planned. He was supposed to miss it. They were going to put it in Donnarumma's hands.
So
that was part of the plan.
This is what Jorginho released to the media. It was part of the plan for them to allow Donnarumma to win it for Italy. So who do we have lined up for the England side?
We have Saka, another kid.
Another young player. Who he came on in the second half of regular time for Trippier.
Yeah.
Saka is usually a starter, but obviously taking a more defensive approach for England in this final, playing with five defenders, they elected to start Trippier over Saka.
Right.
Saka's a good player.
He is a phenomenal player.
Nothing against him.
All these kids are phenomenal players.
So Saka lines up.
And Donnarumma makes the save.
Italy became Euro 2020 champions.
End of story.
But the way that Donnarumma walked off after saving that PK, we were talking about ice in his veins, okay? Did you see that? He didn't even look back at his teammates. He just walked up, got up, and started walking towards the sideline. As you said, he almost had everything tuned out.
Right.
They asked Donnarumma, what happened after you made that save? And his response was, I didn't know that we had won.
Right.
If you guys go watch the video, Donnarumma gets up and just starts casually walking, head up high, okay? And his teammates are all running towards him. And it was at the moment that he turned around that he sees them all running, about to jump on him. And you see a little smirk, a smile start to emerge. And he said in the interview, it was at that moment that I realized we had won.
You think different than I do. I think that he was just so in the zone that he was waiting for the next PK to happen.
See, I don't.
I know.
I think Donnarumma knew that they had won, but this was a big way to shut up all of his critics. Donnarumma, for only being 22, 23 years old, right?
22.
He has a lot of critics.
Yeah.
People talk a lot about him.
Sure.
Which, listen, when you become the starting goalkeeper for AC Milan at 17 years old,
you're gonna get a lot of critics.
I want these critics to shut up.
But you know what I want? I'm gonna find it again, and I'm gonna print it out, and I'm gonna make it like 18 by 20 poster. It's a picture of Buffon placing the crown
on Donnarumma's head.
Yeah, it's the most beautiful picture ever.
And how blessed are we as Italian fans to have had Gigi Buffon, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Up until he was almost 40, right? He played for the Italian national team. Yeah. And then we get this young superstar in Gigi Donnarumma.
But it's not just those two. We can go back to Walter Zenga. We can go back to Bayuca.
Right.
Those guys aren't as good, but they were good.
But I'm just talking about recent memory, okay?
Right.
2006 World Cup, we had Buffon.
Right.
Now we win the 2020 Euro Cup, and we have Gigi Donnarumma, okay? And Chiellini said it best. He goes, I've played with both of them in major tournaments, major games. I can't tell the difference.
Right.
He goes, they're the same.
Right.
And we're blessed, man.
Right.
Because Donnarumma, we have at least another 10 years of him
more
on this national
22,
team.
More than
that's what I'm saying.
16 years if he plays up to be 40 years old. You know what I mean?
But at least 10 of him
for
this national team. So that's
two World Cups.
Yep.
Maybe a third.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting. There's just no other way around it. It's exciting. So that was the game in a nutshell. We took, 50 minutes to describe it? You probably would have been better off just watching the whole game again.
Exactly.
However, that's just where the emotion goes. And I'm getting chills just replaying those moments in my head.
Listen, in 2006, I was with my father when Italy won the World Cup, and that was an awesome moment for me. In 2021, I was with my two sons.
Now as a father.
So, And as I say this, I get choked up because it's an awesome feeling.
I believe it. I mean, I wouldn't know that feeling yet. I know in 2006, I was with my father and it was great. But a part of me always felt like I missed something. I don't know why, but I felt like for as big of a moment as that 2006 World Cup was, we hugged each other for a few minutes. You know, we congratulated each other. We were excited and then it ended. And it left a void inside of me, which is why I went to New York.
Right, right.
I needed that experience. And now that I've got it, I am okay watching the games at home with my family for the rest of eternity.
Right, right.
But for when Donnarumma made that save, to have thousands of Italians, Italian-Americans, it wasn't even just Italians. There were a few English fans there. Sure. There was some Spanish fans supporting Italy, okay? For everybody to just start jumping up and down. And I turned around and my cousin Josue is there. And I don't think I've ever hugged the man harder in my life. Right. When I tell you I grabbed him and squeezed him to the point where I almost crushed him. Then I remember letting out a few screams of joy. Okay. People high-fiving each other left and right. All random strangers. And in unison, you just start hearing, Italia, Italia. I have chills right now.
Yeah.
I have absolute chills.
Listen, I was with my father 1990 when they lost, 1994 when they lost, 2002. And then 2006, we were together when they won. It's just awesome.
There's no better feeling. So, let's get to some fun facts about this team.
Okay.
We're keeping you guys longer today. So, we're hoping that you can pay some attention. Nah, I'm just kidding.
You want to start with the fun facts? You want me to start with the fun facts? I got a fun fact.
Go ahead. Start with your fun fact.
All right. Fun fact. If a player takes a shot and the ball explodes and goes into the back of the net, it's not a goal.
First of all, where in the world did you find that?
I saw it today. It's like 10 of the craziest rules.
Has that ever happened?
Yes. It actually happened when an English player took a shot and the ball deflated on the way to the goal. It went in, but they never disallowed the goal. We should petition for that.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So my fun facts are more based around Italy.
Okay.
But to start, we were talking about unity behind this team, right?
Yeah.
How they all played for one another. We saw, you know, the Spinazzola injury and how the team corralled around him to support him and made sure that he came back and was at Wembley for this final, right? So for the love for Spinazzola was there. But they didn't only have that love for Spina. They had that love for one another, the whole team together. Right. And this brings me into my point. There's an article going around. So Sidigu, the backup goalkeeper and the oldest goalkeeper on this team, he only made an appearance in the last couple of minutes against Wales in this tournament, okay? But he was such an essential player to the locker room, okay? In this article that's going around, did you know that before the final, Sidigu made the whole team cry?
No.
Let me tell you how.
This doesn't sound like a fun fact. It sounds like you're going to make everybody cry that's listening to this.
It's okay if you cry because you're going to be crying for how beautiful this is. Sidigu personally handwrote every player on the team a letter explaining to them why they were so important to him, okay? I mean, like, I'm choking up right now just saying this. And why they were important to them and what they meant to him and what they had done for him in this tournament so far. On the day of the final, Sidigu surprised the entire team. He surprised them with videos from their family members wishing them good luck.
Oh my God.
In the game against England.
And I thought you were going to tell me that he gave everybody Jolly Ranchers. That's awesome.
This ain't the USA.
That's awesome.
This is Italy, where family is everything.
Wow. That's awesome.
Think about how important this guy was in the locker room for that unity and getting the team together. And, you know, this is a guy who got 2 minutes of play this entire tournament.
Right.
And he went out of his way to do this for his fellow players.
And you know why he got that time, right?
Well,
that was out of respect for him to get some time out there before he retires.
I don't think he's going to be retiring anytime soon, but he definitely won't be there for the next Euro Cup.
No.
However, Mancini also believes, and Mancini has said this before, he goes, I hated being on a team and not getting time. Right. He goes, I believe that everybody who is on my team should get some time. Doesn't matter if it's a minute or if it's 90 minutes. Right. But you will at least see the field. Which didn't happen for Mancini this year. There were a few players, one or two, that didn't see the field. But they were still young.
Right.
So they will see time in the future. Sure. Okay. So that was Sirigu's beautiful story.
Right.
Another fun fact. You might remember this. I was too young, so I don't remember.
I don't remember anything anymore.
Well, that's what happens when you start getting old. Let me remind you. Mancini had a heartbreak at Wembley.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
But he had a heartbreaker at Wembley in 1992. He was playing and was the captain of Sampdoria.
Right.
They lost to Barcelona in the European Cup.
Okay.
Okay. It was late in the second half. I think there was only like a few minutes left when they lost that game. And for him, that was a dark moment that was very hard for him to forget.
Right.
Mancini wanted to make sure that history didn't repeat itself. Going into Wembley, okay? Playing against the English. It's like he didn't want that dark cloud over him to dictate anything that was going to happen in the game against England.
Right.
And what's even more incredible is Gianluca Vialli, who you mentioned before, has been fighting pancreatic cancer since 2018.
Was one of my favorite players as a kid growing up.
Unbelievable player, striker. Day in and day out has gone to work for this team, with this team, right. Okay? But Gianluca Vialli was on that Sampdoria team.
Yeah, he was. There's a picture, if I remember correctly, of Vialli holding Mancini's, you know, head.
Right.
And he's probably telling him, it's okay.
You did everything you could.
Yeah.
And Attilio Lombardo was also on that Sampdoria team,
yeah,
who was also an assistant coach for this Italian national team. So this trio, Mancini, Vialli, and Lombardo, who all experienced that dark moment at Wembley in 1992, made sure that in 2021 it wasn't going to happen again.
Absolutely.
These guys came in, and we talked about it before, I have to mention it one last time. They began the rebirth of Italy.
Absolutely.
The Rinascimento movement is back and it's alive. And now Italy has to keep progressing forward.
That's it.
So I thought those were some fun little tidbits. Oh, I actually do have one more fun little fact. So there's some similarities between the 2006 World Cup squad and the 2020 European Champion squad.
There's not some.
They're all similar. They're all similar. Yeah. So, listen to this one, guys, and tell me how creepy this is. In 2006 and in 2020, Italy are both underdogs, okay? Nobody has them as favorited to win the tournament. Both teams went into the tournaments ranked number 7 in the world.
Right.
Both teams conceded early.
Correct.
France scored first against Italy in 2006. England scored early against Italy in 2021. Both equalizing goals were scored by defenders.
That's right.
Marco Materazzi in 2006 and Bonucci in 2021. And both teams won the tournaments in penalty kicks.
Now, those are pretty cool fun facts. Should we touch on a little bit of the Copa America? Give some congratulations to...
Before we do that...
Go ahead.
I just want to say hats off to England.
Absolutely.
Okay. As much as we saw the players upset and they didn't want to accept those second place medals.
Listen, I wouldn't want to accept them either. I went there to play to win the thing, right?
Absolutely.
And I explained this to the kids too, because they were like, why are they taking the medals off? They went there to win. They didn't go there to play second fiddle.
But
they played their asses off all tournament long. They played phenomenal and they lost. They're a hell of a team and they'll be back.
I have nothing but respect for them, as we mentioned before.
I love all these players. I told you in the past I love all these players.
I do too. I really do love this England squad. I mean, if I had to pick a third team, obviously it's Italy, USA, but if I had to pick a third, it would be England squad.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really, really do love and respect all those players, and they'll get there. They're still a young team.
They're very young.
They will get
there.
Very
young.
But hats off to them. You know, congratulations is due. And although this podcast has been all about Italy, it went to penalty kicks.
Right.
This game could have very, very easily swung into England's favor.
It's 50-50.
Right. So they deserved it just as much, in my opinion. I will not say they deserved it more, but they did deserve it just as much.
And, you know, we're biased to Italy because I'm first-generation American. My whole entire family is in Italy.
Right.
Same thing with you.
I lived in Italy for a good portion of my life. So for me, Italy, it's weird. You could say it's a second home, but sometimes I feel like it's more of my home than the United States is.
Because you lived the majority of your life there.
Right. So there is a big difference. But, you know, and congratulations are due to Italy as well.
Absolutely.
The Italian national team, congrats. If you ever listen to us, I hope you do. But congrats. You guys deserved everything that you accomplished. Moving on.
More congratulations in order.
So while there was the Euro Cup going on, there was another cup happening on the other side of the world, which was the Copa America.
That's right.
And we're talking about a team, you know, united, rallying behind one player like we did for Florenzi and
Spinazzola.
Spinazzola. I'm sorry.
But Florenzi got hurt in the first game, so that's why you brought his name up.
For Spinazzola. On the other side of the world, in South America, there was a team who has arguably the greatest player in the world.
Without a doubt.
Lionel Messi.
Without a doubt.
And Messi's up there in age now. He's about 33.
Right.
And he had never won a cup.
Right.
With
the national team.
Correct. And it was another beautiful thing to witness. But that team wanted nothing more than to put it all out there and allow him to hold a cup for the first time with his national team.
So congratulations to Messi and Argentina.
Correct. Hats off to Brazil as well, too. Because, listen, it was a 1-0 game, you know, and Brazil played. They have
Neymar. You know, Neymar's a good player, too.
He's no joke.
Exactly.
I apologize to those two teams because I should have given them a little bit more attention during Copa America, but
the Euro Cup's overshadowed.
Yeah.
You know,
the Euro Cup's obviously took up most of our time. Fun fact. I'm excited about this one. My favorite player ever is Diego Armando Maradona. And there are serious talks right now between UEFA and CONMEBOL to organize a game between the new Copa America champions, right? South American champions, and the new European champions to honor the late Diego Armando Maradona.
In Napoli,
of all places. Which makes sense to me because now the stadium is called the Stadio Diego Armando Maradona. Right. I am hoping for nothing more than for that to happen. I would absolutely watch that game. Hell, I might even buy tickets and fly out to Napoli for that game.
Buy me some tickets too. I'll come with you.
Absolutely. Listen, that is something that I don't want to miss. Maradona being my favorite player, having played for my favorite team at Napoli, and watching both sides both honor this legend of a man and playing a match for him with Messi, who has many times been called the heir to Maradona, right?
Right.
Playing in Napoli Stadium. Oh, my.
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it.
Oh my God.
Now I thought about something else. How phenomenal would it be if this does happen that we do a couple of shows from Napoli?
You heard it here first. Anthony's buying us plane tickets to Napoli.
I thought you said you were buying them. We're going to start a GoFundMe account.
Yep. So GoFundMe account online right now for our trip to Napoli for this game. Everybody, please go donate. No, I mean, if it happens, we're going. Whoever else wants to come with, let us know. Let's start organizing this because this is an opportunity that we can't miss.
And it should be something that should be done every year to honor him. Let's be honest.
It's just interesting that in the year that the world loses Maradona, right? Because it hasn't been a year that he's passed yet.
Right.
Has it been a year?
No.
No, it has not.
No.
It has not been a year. In the year that Maradona's been gone, the two places that he loved the most, Argentina and Italy, both become champions.
Yeah.
And listen, I don't know what everybody believes in, you know, if they believe in the afterlife or help from the above. But if I want to have my romantic way of looking at it, Maradona had something to do with all of this.
Well, we should call John Edwards, see if we can find out.
Maradona was up there just dictating this whole play. He said. And you know why he chose England for the final? He wanted to give him the hand of God one last time.
Oh, man. Let's petition that. So real quick, before we end the show, we want to touch on something that I saw the other day and I thought was phenomenal. And made me love this kid even more. And we're talking about Marcus
Rashford.
This kid grew up poor, the youngest of five kids, mother working three jobs. She basically fed her kids before she fed herself, and most of the times didn't have enough food for herself. Fast forward, this kid becomes a professional soccer player, does well for himself, makes a name for himself as a player. COVID-19 hits. There's lockdowns. Now, when he was a kid, as a coming from a poor family, he was going to school and having programs that would put food in front of him, whether it was in school or whatever the case may be. That all stopped during the lockdowns. These other poor kids could not go to school and get their meals. So it's a lot of these kids were going to bed hungry.
Right.
And this kid went and wrote an open letter to Parliament and got them to start it all back up and fed the kids.
But not only did he write an open letter to Parliament, wasn't he supplying meals at one point?
No, he wasn't supplying. He got all the businesses to come together and start making meals for these kids.
Yep.
And then Parliament stepped in and helped out. And then in October of 2020, it ran out. The deadline ran out.
Right. The funding.
And he started back up. And Boris called him and said, hey, we're going to do it again. So as of now, I believe there's been 21 million meals served and still going. This kid is a hero. Forget the on the field stuff.
And this is why I said before.
This is how you use that platform to help out your community. Not only your community, but so many kids.
He's bigger than the game itself.
That's it.
He really is an outstanding person with an amazing heart.
That's it.
And this leads us into our last point for this podcast. With all that Marcus Rashford did for his community, for his country, during such a terrible time, a pandemic that the entire world was dealing with. After the Italy-England match, there was racial abuse on social media platforms towards Rashford, Sancho, and Saka, okay? And obviously, those are all the black players on the England PK taking lineup.
They don't deserve that. Nobody deserves
it. They don't deserve that. Racism needs to die, not only in this beautiful game that we love, but in the entire world.
That's it.
There's no place for it, okay? And especially Rashford, after everything that you just mentioned that he did, minutes after the game ended, there was a mural of him.
Not just one. All his murals that they had painted were defaced. I mean, this is the same guy that put food on the table for your kids to eat, and they're doing this.
Correct.
It's crazy. Drives me absolutely insane. This kid doesn't deserve it.
He doesn't.
None of them deserve it.
Nobody
deserves it.
Absolutely. Nobody deserves the racial discrimination. This is it's one of those subjects that it's hard to talk about because you think we're at a point in time where we've moved past it, but we obviously haven't.
Right.
And this is another point that I want to make. And I'm just going to talk, obviously we're talking about the English fans right now. The Federation needs to step in and there needs to be some form of punishment. Something needs to change. This needs to stop. But what I've seen on social media now is Italians, after winning the cup, criticizing the England fans. And I just want to give a little reminder to Italians as well that we are not above anybody else. And I will tell you why. In 1990, when we were hosting the World Cup, okay, you are upset that England was booing our national anthem for this game. Don't forget that when Argentina played in Napoli for the 1990 World Cup, Italians were booing the Argentinian national anthem, okay? Don't forget that we have players of color playing in our league in Serie A, and there has been many racist chants towards Boateng, Zorro, Muntari, just to name a few. And last but not least, Balotelli is Italian, played for our national team, gave us some of the most amazing goals I've ever seen wearing our Azzurro color, okay? It is not right. It needs to stop and it needs to end. And there's one last reminder for you Italians, okay? It was a few years back. Okay, somebody that we've mentioned many times in tonight's podcast, Leonardo Bonucci. There were Italians wishing death upon his children. It needs to end. There's no place for this in soccer, calcio, football, whatever you want to call it. We need to learn how to be better people.
Not just in soccer, in everything.
The beauty of this game and life is sportsmanship.
That's
respect,
right.
Being kind to one another. And that's the direction that we need to head in. It's what everybody needs to remember. All the abuse, we don't support it.
Nope, not one bit.
Needs to end. And with that being said,
we'll give you a quick run through what's coming up soon. We're going to talk about all the leagues that are starting up, transfers that happen. We won't go into the fantasy transfers, although I like doing that.
No transfers yet. I'm sorry. I'm still heated about all this racism talk.
The transfers aren't really all set in stone yet, so we're not going to talk about them until next week because we're going to be closer to the beginning of the seasons and teams are going to want to start signing guys so they have them ready. But for some of the people that listen that don't really follow soccer and are interested in learning and understanding what we got going on out there, we have the five major leagues that we're probably going to follow throughout
majority of this series, this show, this podcast.
Right. So if you want to start, you can name a couple.
So sorry, everybody. I just need a couple moments that still heated and aggravated over everything we were just talking about. So Serie A, obviously our favorite league. Anthony's an AC Milan fan. I'm an SSC Napoli fan. It will begin again on August 13th.
My anniversary, by the way.
Oh, congrats. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. 16 years.
So it'll begin on August 13th, 2021, and it will run until May 22nd of 2022. And the current champion is Inter Milan.
I'm not sure about their new jersey.
I love it.
There's a picture. It kind of looks like he's wearing sequins.
Well, that's the snake.
Yeah.
The
Once I saw a different picture, I was like, oh, okay. I got to look at it again. I got to study. Anyway.
I have to say, I like it. And I especially like the fact that there's no sponsor on the shirt.
Right.
I think soccer has become more about money than it is about.
Isn't that every sports?
Right.
Like
that, but so. I love to see it when there's no sponsor on the jersey. Then we have the French Ligue 1. Okay. Current champion, Lille, which is surprising because everybody would have thought it was going to be PSG.
Right.
Their league will start on August 7th, 2021. I'm sorry about that, everybody.
Play 4, 2032.
And it will run until May 21st of 2022. Then we have La Liga.
The Spanish League.
Spanish League, current champions, Atletico Madrid. That will run from August 13th, 2021. So same as the Serie A, until May 22nd of 2022. Exact same as Serie A. Then Ant, what do we have next?
Then we got the Bundesliga, where we'll be celebrating beer and FC Bayern Munich. That starts on August 13th and ends on June 25th, 2022.
All the teams that we had mentioned before, Bayern Munich, were first-year winners. They had not won the league in a little bit of time.
You talking about Bayern?
I'm talking about Atletico, Lille, and Inter.
Oh, right, correct.
Because usually, you know, what you see in Serie A was Juventus had a 10-year run of domination.
Yeah, because Juventus is what I like to tell people.
The Yankees
of European soccer.
Right.
They buy the best players all the time.
League One, like we said, we were surprised to not see PSG.
Right.
PSG is the richest team, not only in France, but probably in almost all of football.
Correct.
And to see Lille come up and take him away from that number one spot was incredible. Atletico Madrid, same thing.
Barcelona's usually the
Barcelona and Real Madrid dominate the Spanish league. So to see Atletico win it was another thing of beauty. In Germany, Bayern Munich is the team.
That's it. Always has been. And plus, they have one of the best players in the world over there.
They do. It's crazy to see, though, because with the German league, what you'll see a lot during the regular season is that there are teams that, you know, just inch above Bayern Munich in points. So it almost seems like it could be possible that Bayern will not win it, but they always come back and finish the job.
Right.
And then we're ending.
Finally, we end with, we're not going to end with the Premier League, which is Manchester City is the current champions, which starts on August 14th, 2021 and ends May 22nd, 2022.
And the Premier League is the English League.
Is the English League. But we will also sprinkle in some MLS here and there.
Yes.
Talk about players that go on loan to European teams.
Yep.
And then we have a few tournaments that are lined up.
So we'll obviously be following the UEFA Champions League,
which is currently Chelsea's the champions.
Correct. They ended up playing Manchester City
right
in the final.
Now, if we're going to talk about Chelsea, we can talk about Jorginho, we can talk about Emerson, and also Christian Pulisic, who's an American, and this kid just dominated.
I agree with you, but I feel like we've done enough talking for today.
That's it.
So we'll save that for another episode. But we have the Champions League coming up. We have the Europa League, which is another UEFA-sponsored tournament. Yep. With the teams that didn't qualify for Champions, they will be playing in the Europa League. Then we have the CONCACAF Gold Cup final coming up, which will be interesting to see. And we also have the World Cup qualifiers starting. Do they start year or 2022? I believe they start in September, don't they?
I believe so, yeah.
Right, so September. We
have the World Cup. And I don't think it's just it's worldwide is going to be a qualifying.
Oh, yes. Well, that's why it's called the World Cup.
Well, no, I'm talking about the qualifications.
Yeah.
All we have here is a few of the local.
Yeah, no, but the qualifications are obviously worldwide. Everybody's divided up into their own sector, and they're going to be competing against one another to qualify for the World Cup. So those are the things that are on the agenda and schedule for us to talk about and post. Please message us, comment, or share any of our posts that you enjoy. Let us know what you want us to cover the most.
We'll cover it all, whatever you want. If you want us to talk about a certain player or a certain team, we'll cover it. We'll get all the research, we'll deep dive, and we'll even tell you what kind of grass they use on their training facility field.
So with that being said, we thank you for joining us on this long, special episode of the Euro 2020 final, and we hope to see you soon.
Talk to you guys later.